This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets in action tonight in Toronto. The Moose also in action tonight. They're in Milwaukee to face the Admirals. Mitch Peacock joins us now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our good friend, Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster, Mitch Peacock. Mitch, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. It's a pleasure, guys.
It's pleasure's all ours, Mitch. Obviously, the Moose in action tonight in Milwaukee after a very successful homestand last weekend where they were able to take both games from the San Antonio Rampage. You know, what's the mood like been around the team this week after they come off that very impressive effort at home last week where they really dominated the Admirals in both of those games?
Well, I think what it's done is it's given the guys a little bit of a confidence that when they work and when they stick to the system, they can find success. You know, the early part of the season was difficult. No exhibition games, the team coming together quickly for those first two games in Iowa. Iowa with a lot of returning players playing at home and good crowds. And so that first weekend was almost like the preseason for the Manitoba Moose. So of course, there were points on the line and they wanted to win those hockey games. But just at the starting point they were at coming off of that unique Jets training camp where they had those three back-to-back games and just really didn't allow the Moose to have personnel around to get a lot of preparation. And they felt like they were working from behind a little bit. So a couple of really good weeks of practice, a real focus on systems, a real commitment to developing an identity as a working team, a team that will really have to battle for goals and nothing will come easy for. Getting all of that kind of in place and that mindset and then seeing it turn into results, not only sweeping San Antonio, but taking 3 out of 4 in the homestand, I think was really important for the guys. The mood was much more upbeat this week, although they realized that, you know, heading into this weekend, they got a real test on their hands against this Milwaukee team that's won 3 straight games, that has the best record in terms of points in the American Hockey League, and just 1 regulation time loss in 9 games. They know that they're going to need that confidence and that belief in their system because they're going to be challenged this weekend and on into the early part of the week.
Mitch, we have a lot of Moose players that we want to ask you about, but I have to start off with
that's the team I know a lot
otherwise
about.
It's going to be a really awkward interview.
You know, Mitch, I got to start off with CJ Cease, and this is a player who played 4 years of college hockey, you know, 5th round pick, you know, really came on, you know, especially in his last year, Minnesota State University, Mankato, and, you know, he played 6 games with the Moose last year. He's already up to 5 goals, I guess. You know, what stood out to you about CJ Cease? Obviously, you know, he's got the goal scoring acumen, but overall, what's impressed you most about a guy who's, you know, this is his first full pro hockey year?
Yeah, I think that what he did, I think what's impressed me the most is how much he learned from the little time he was with the team at the end of last season. What I mean by that is just how he was able to pick up the level of commitment that's required to be successful in pro hockey. And that's not just a here and there thing, that's an everyday thing. That's how you play on the ice, but also how you work in the fitness facility. And so I think CJ Cease was had his eyes open and really did a good job to understand, okay, this is what I'm getting into. Okay, this is what they're going to need from me. Went back and had a very effective summer, came in with the right approach, and has shown very much, you know, the organization does a good job of saying to players, look, we like you because you're this. Go ahead and be that. Feel confident being yourself. Bring your best self, and we'll see if there's a place for you at the next level. And so CJ Cease has just been able to kind of free himself up, do what he does. And to me, what he does is he plays that three-zone game. He's a very smart hockey player, very well-rounded. And he ends up with the points, but the points sort of start from being in the right place all the way up the ice. Very impressive in terms of his sense of 200 feet to me. And really interesting to me that he really only became a center in the last couple of years of college. So this guy's got a good head on his shoulders, and I think it's going to take him, you know, as far as he can go with his abilities. Really important part of the team so far, and, you know, now he finds himself centering the team's top line between Christian Vesalainen and Seth Griffin.
Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. You know Mitch, of course, as the play-by-play voice of the Manitoba Moose. Mitch, got to ask you about Mason Appleton. He had a tremendous last Sunday afternoon against the Rampage, going for 3 goals and 2 assists, 5 points. He sort of picked up where he left off last year, leading the Moose in points. You know, what's next for Mason Appleton? At this point, what more does he have to prove at the AHL level?
I think for Mason Appleton, what he has to prove is that he can play more games at his best level. And he knows what it takes for him to be successful. He's got to be skating. He's got to be taking the puck to the net. He's got to be consistent in those battles along the boards. And I don't just mean the offensive end, but in all three zones on the ice. This is a guy who I think has a real ability to play at the next level. I don't know that he's going to be a point producer at a high level in the next level of play, but I do think he can be an NHL player because he's smart, because he's hardworking, and because he knows what he can bring to a team. So I think what really is required of Mason is just more of the same more often. And I don't mean that he, you know, goes in and out of games or that he's inconsistent, but just he's got some real key elements to his game and he needs to make sure that they're there game in and game out. And I think what we saw in the early part of the season, even through Jets camp, was sometimes he'd have certain elements of his game there and sometimes he wouldn't. Even the two games against Iowa, he didn't seem to be moving his feet the way that he does. But everybody will look at the last game as the breakout. He's got points in four straight games. After that opening weekend against Iowa, things started to turn around for Mason Appleton. And I think the person responsible for that is Mason Appleton because he realizes what he's capable of. And I know that he had a conversation after practice one day on the ice with Pascal Vince, and I saw them talking. Later, Pascal made reference to having a conversation with Mason. And I suspect the contents of that conversation were really centered around, look, you know how good you are. You know what you can do. Don't be distracted by everything else. Don't be feeling any burdens from what you did last year. Go play Mason Appleton hockey. Everything's going to be fine. And I think we're seeing signs of that.
Mitch, Emil Poirier is a player that I don't think a lot of Moose fans and Jets fans are aware of, and I've talked to Dave Minuk, who obviously, you know, does a color with you on Moose broadcasts, and this is a former first-round pick, late first-round pick of the Calgary Flames, and, you know, he's had his troubles off the ice, well-documented problems with alcohol, but is it possible that, you know, the Moose have a player here who's going to be more than a bottom six forward, and, you know, he can be a bit of a diamond in the rough for the Moose?
Well, that would be the ideal situation for sure. He's still in on a tryout. He's working hard to show that he can be a regular part of the team and make a difference. But he's also shown that he can be productive. And we saw that last weekend. He had a goal and an assist playing on that line that had Harkins in the middle and Poirier on one side, Appleton on the other. He is a guy who likes to get into the corners, likes to battle for pucks, is a worker. And I think he's also a guy who, you know, given what he's gone through, is ready to, you know, roll up his sleeves, take an honest look at this as maybe one of his last opportunities and give it everything that he has. And, you know, I see a guy who seems to be working to earn himself a spot here and making a good impact. He'll go into the game today with Appleton on the other wing as well. It looks like Michael Spacek will center that line today, with Spacek coming back after missing time with a family concern back in the Czech Republic. But Emil Poirier, I would say, is getting an opportunity from the Moose, and I think he's taking the opportunity at this stage as well.
Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about the Manitoba Moose. The Moose in action tonight in Milwaukee, and of course also in action tomorrow in Rockford. Games you can hear on moosehockey.com. Mitch, how has Logan Stanley looked in his first consistent professional hockey? You know, we obviously missed a couple games with the injury. We had him on in the program last week, you know, talking about, you know, coming back from the injury and his time with the Moose so far. From your perspective, how has he looked on the blue line for the Moose?
What strikes me about Logan Stanley is for a guy who's only 20 years old, he's very professional. He just seems to have a consistency about how he goes about his business. There's a maturity in the way he deals with people. I think this is a guy who is very excited about what's possible for him and knows that if he's focused and dedicated, there might be some really exciting things coming down the road. So he's just committed himself to doing the work, to being in the moment, trying to be the best that he can be. He's played two games in a row now after missing three. I think it's really important that he gets in a swing of playing games so he can get into a rhythm. But there's a real sort of intelligence about his game, a simplicity as well, which I think is a good thing. I don't mean that as a criticism. And it's going to be fun to see him play and see him develop once he gets a run of games going here, just to see, because sometimes when players get comfortable and get a little confident, they get away from what they do well. They start trying to do a whole bunch of other things, and then you see where the problems come in. I'm just curious to know what it'll look like once he starts playing a bunch of games in a row, how he can stick to what he does best and his ability to get the most out of what he has.
Mitch, in the next 24 hours, we're expecting a couple of Moose players to be called up by the Jets for that trip to Finland, and we're expecting it to be Erik Komrie and Christian Vesalainen. And I guess the question I have for you is, you know, how nice is that for Erik Komrie to be rewarded? You know, he's had some great starts this year for the Moose, especially the back-to-back set.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about Vesalainen. I have no indication what his status would be. I can tell you Erik Komrie has been outstanding. And, you know, I think this is an interesting time for Erik, because in other years where there might have been, you know, Connor Hellebuyck playing ahead of him, Andre Pavlik there with him, Michael Hutchinson around, he's the clear-cut number three in the organization, clear-cut number one on the American Hockey League team. He's got some, you know, responsibilities. He has, you know, there's no other way around it. He's the guy who has to slot into that role, and he's just jumped on it. He had two excellent games against San Antonio last weekend. He had a fantastic game against Belleville the week before when the Moose won their home opener. He's doing the things that the Moose and the Jets need him to do, and as a result, it only makes sense that he would have a chance to do something like this. And I guess, you know, organizationally and contract-wise, he's the only option as well. But in fairness, he is very, very worthy. He has played some exceptional goal. There's a consistency there. And I think Erik has shown over the years that he can be consistent, but I think consistent at a notch perhaps below where he'd like his game to go. And I think he's making a step here this year so far, and good for him.
Tonight at 6 p.m., tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m., both games available on moosehockey.com. Mitch Peacock with the call from Milwaukee and Rockford. Mitch, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us and sharing some insight into the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, always fun, guys. Thanks for having me. I just want to mention, too, the Moose app. A lot of folks wonder, you know, moosehockey.com, but I have to sit down at my computer to listen to the game. You do not. Just have the Moose app, and you can access Listen Live there. Pretty convenient, and glad to have you along tonight from Milwaukee.
Yeah. And Mitch, we'll make sure that we give Dave a hard time for not being on the show while you were on.
It's probably the only time he hasn't been around when I'm around. It seems like we're at the rink all the time, we're on the radio all the time, so maybe he thought he was giving me a break.
Well, if he ever gets a little too close, you let us know. We'll rein him back in, Mitch.
It's okay. I got elbows.
Mitch Peacock, Manitoba Moose broadcaster. Thanks for joining us. When we come back, we're going to talk about some coaches on the hot seat, some teams that are off to a rocky start this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets and your home of the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
You know, that's normal. I expect that heck, my job should be in question right now. You know, that comes with the trade. But I'm not going to coach to try to save my job. I'm going to coach to try to win a Stanley Cup.
St. Louis Blues head coach Mike Yeo feeling the heat after the Blues collapsed against the Jets on Monday night and then lost on home ice 7-4 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Blues, a team that a lot of people thought were going to bounce back after a pretty impressive offseason, struggling seriously early this year, only two regulation time wins, only two wins period, pardon me, in nine games. They're 2-4-3 and one of three teams really struggling early this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day, and this segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
What about yesterday's early start in Vegas?
Holiday in Vegas, isn't it?
It's Nevada Day.
Yeah, Nevada Day. They did it last year also.
And yes, this ties into Keener Jerseys, our good friends.
Okay.
The Golden Knights were wearing their white jerseys yesterday.
I see.
And obviously, you know, the home team usually always wears their dark jerseys. But usually, I thought it was interesting. I thought, you know, the Keener guys would like that because, you know, you just don't see that very often. So obviously they got, you know, special permission from the NHL for that.
They need to change that, by the way. I think the home team needs to wear white.
Yeah, like they used to have it.
Yeah, or...
Well, that's why it was a whiteout in the first place, because everybody wore their home right. white jerseys, right?
Or figure out a way where, you know, a month ahead of time, you say that, you know, the home team is going to wear white on these games, and then they're going to wear dark on these games, and you tell the opposition, right. so the opposition knows what to bring. I mean,
like, why does it have to be the same thing for 41 games, right?
I mean, you got these, you know, the third jersey that the Jets wear a whole bunch of times, and I mean, I'd much rather see them wearing their white jersey than the Finland blue jersey. Anyways, it's not really a big deal, but it's something that I think could be a nice little treat for the fans, yeah. like it was in Vegas last night.
I didn't know how many people noticed that Vegas was wearing their white jerseys yesterday.
I didn't. Yeah. So there you go. You informed me about something new. Let's start with the St. Louis Blues. As they're 2-4-3, they're seventh, dead last in the Central Division. This is a team that a lot of people had high hopes for entering the season after what I thought was a pretty good offseason.
You know, you just mentioned, sorry to cut you off, Drew, but okay. You just mentioned the Blues are last in the Central. What about the fact that Chicago's 5-2-2, mm-hmm. which is a pretty good start.
Yeah.
You know, points in 7 of 9 games, and they're in sixth. right, like yeah. this. What I'm,
six,
what
two
I'm
and
saying
two now.
What I'm sorry, 6-2-2. What yeah. I'm saying is the Central is
a beast. Yeah, Central is certainly a beast. There's no surprise about that.
Sorry, they're fourth in the Central. Minnesota's fifth.
Yes, but still, your point is that they're a pretty good record, and they're still in fourth place in the ultra competitive Central Division. What about the Blues? You know, you heard from Mike Yeo in that opening clip where he says, yeah, you know, my job should be in jeopardy, which is pretty blunt, and I like it from a coach. 2-4-3. They had the win against the Jets basically all wrapped up, and then they collapsed. You just a team that was playing with no confidence in the third period. You go on home ice against a Columbus Blue Jackets team that has not been great this year. They're playing a little bit better, but they're only 5-4. And again, you give up 7 goals on home ice. What needs to change in St. Louis for this team to turn it around? And is it a coaching change?
Yeah, and you know, let's go back to that clip that we played at the top of the segment. I mean, Mike, you don't hear coaches say that very often. Mike
no,
Yeo,
he's an honest coach, though.
Right. And I got to say, Drew, you know that I go into the visitor's room after most games.
Yes.
I mean, I've been going to less games this year. I have a daughter, so I'm not going to as many games. I'm not in the room after every game, but I was in the room after the St. Louis game. And I've never seen a team in 8 years vacate that dressing room quicker than the St. Louis Blues. I mean, when we got in there, when the media got in there, all the bags were gone. There wasn't even stick tape on the floor. Like, they were gone. And that Blues team, the way they were walking around, I mean, it really had kind of an empty feeling in that dressing room. Not just literally empty, but, I mean, this is
emotionally
a team,
empty.
Emotionally empty. And that was a bad beat by the Winnipeg Jets, because the Blues were up by 2 goals going into the third period on the road. They have to have that game. They have to win that game. And to your point about the Columbus game, I mean, that's a even worse beat following up that Jets game, right? Mm-hmm. And Columbus is a team that, you know, they're a 500 team right now. You know, they've got all those problems in net. You know, Bobrovsky hasn't been starting as many games.
Panarin's
future is uncertain. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Tortorella calling out, you know, not only his team, but, you know, the way the game is played nowadays.
Which we'll talk about in the third hour of today's program. It's
right.
Too much love on the ice, not enough hate.
Right. So, and I love those comments by Torts.
So do I.
So when you're talking about the Blues, I mean, they play at home tonight to the Blackhawks, and that's a must-win. And you're only 11 games into the season, but it's a must-win because, you know, Nashville, they don't lose. They're 8-2, 8-2.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado won again last night.
7-2.
Mikko Rantanen's already got 100 assists. I'm joking, but he's got, I think, 15 assists already.
It doesn't take long for the Blues to fall right out of playoff contention.
Well,
or any team fall right out of playoff
there's
contention.
No reason to believe that Nashville, Colorado, Winnipeg are going to fall off. Maybe Chicago falls off, but it's quite possible that only 4 teams from the Central make it. So if you're St. Louis, not only is tonight a must win, but you got to go on a bit of a run here. You've only won 2 of your first 9 games. And that's not going to cut it. And, you know, Drew, you asked, like, how do they get it turned around? And, you know, Jake Allen has to be better. You know, they have to get more from a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko.
He was pretty invisible on that game on the Monday night against the Jets.
He hasn't had a good start to the year. I mean, they've got some young players in the lineup right now, like Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas. I don't think either of those players have a goal yet. I might be mistaken, but you know, Jordan Kyrou is a guy that I thought could, you know, maybe be a Calder Trophy finalist this year, the way he played in the Ontario Hockey League. Same thing goes for Robert Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Put up big numbers for the London Knights. So, you know, they haven't quite worked out. You know, Ryan O'Reilly, I think, has arguably been their best player. And, you know, Jaden Schwartz, he's not putting up, you know, the same numbers that he was putting up last year. So
the Blues are less than the sum of their parts. Because you look at the Blues on paper, you're like, that's a pretty good team. You know, they got a pretty solid defense. You know, they have a pretty good forward group. You go up the middle with O'Reilly, Shen, and Bozak, you know, as your three centers. Nothing wrong with that.
Jaden Schwartz has one goal and 3 points in seven games.
They're struggling. There's a lot of struggles in St. Louis. Let me ask you this. Which team are you more concerned about, or which coach is in more jeopardy? Mike Yeo in St. Louis or John Stevens in Los Angeles? The Kings have lost 6 games in a row. They're 2-7-1 on the season. They're in dead last in the Pacific Division.
I think both of these guys are in trouble. I mean, this early on in the season, and you've lost 7 games in a row, and I realize that, you know, Ilya Kovalchuk was the big free agent signing, but it's not just, you know, Ilya Kovalchuk that was going to change their fortunes. I mean, the health of Jeff Carter, you know, you're expecting to get more out of Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson this year.
They're expecting Dustin Brown back, I think, this weekend to
so
play.
So Dustin Brown hurts them. We talked about it a few weeks back on the power play. Dustin Brown's net front presence on the power play hurts them, but you can't blame Dustin Brown's absence on why you lost 7 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they haven't been very good. They're not scoring enough goals. They're giving up too many goals.
They lost earlier this week. Luc Robitaille, team president, flew in from wherever he was to I guess, watch the team practice or watch the team play. I mean, all the signs are... I mean, Jonathan Quick has been... I mean, he was injured, and we had talked about it with Marty Biron earlier. Jonathan Quick has been horrendous this year. His numbers are something like an .840 save percentage.
Well, and that's been, you know, the argument against the LA Kings, right? Because when you look at Jonathan Quick year after year, I mean, his numbers last year were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I think his numbers were very underrated.
Jonathan Quick has an .845 save percentage and a .455 goals against average in, granted, only 4 games, but still.
Right, and when Jonathan Quick can't bail you out, it's like the Carey Price effect, right? And Carey Price did that for so many years with the Montreal Canadiens, but when you're that bad like they were last year, it doesn't matter who's in net. If Carey Price's save percentage is .905 as opposed to .920, mm-hmm. I mean, that's an extra goal a game, right?
You're talking about the Canadiens in this instance.
Right, and, you know, Jonathan Quick, you know, yeah, he hasn't had a good start to the season. The Kings are giving up too many high-quality scoring chances, too many shots.
Mm-hmm.
But
so which team? Which team's in more trouble?
It's tough to pick one, but I would probably say St. Louis with Mike Yeo. All of the changes they made in the offseason, Ryan O'Reilly comes in, David Perron comes in,
Tyler Bozak,
Patrick Maroon, Tyler Bozak. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you could hear it in the way he talks after games. I mean, I think he knows that his job is on the line.
Is he a loss away? You know, sometimes you hear about coaches being a loss away. You know,
I didn't think I'd be saying this because I actually like Mike Yeo as a head coach.
I do too. I like how honest he is. But
I mean, how many points are you behind first place now? 7?
9?
8?
You're 9 points behind you're 9 points behind the Predators
there
in the Central Division.
9 points, and it's not even November.
If it's bad on home ice tonight against the Blackhawks, you know, he could be the first domino that drops.
You know, we don't know because we're speculating, but I'll say this much. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets fired if they lose. I'm not saying he will, but I wouldn't be surprised.
We will find out. It's a big game tonight for the St. Louis Blues. Also a big game tonight, of course, for the Los Angeles Kings. Pardon me, tomorrow night, the Kings are home to the Rangers as they're trying to shake off a 6-game losing streak. When we come back, John Mattis is going to join us. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. We'll talk about tonight's Jets-Leafs game, and we'll talk about more what's going on around the NHL. Hour number 3 up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Leafs, 6 o'clock puck drop tonight. The three-headed monster, Bayak, Edmonds, Munns with the call. Of course, starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon, it's the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. And then Kevin Owen friends will join us at 5 o'clock for the pregame show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Mattis. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's always a pleasure.
It's pleasure is always ours, John. Obviously brought you on, talk a little bit about the Jets and the Leafs. The rematch from Wednesday night's game back here in Winnipeg will take place tonight in Toronto. What do you think we've learned about these two teams through the first, 10 or 11 games this season? Are the Leafs a better team than the Jets, or do you think that, both of these teams are sort of still feeling their way through the early part of this 2018-19 NHL season?
Yeah, I think I would still bet on the Jets having a better record and going further in the playoffs. That was my thought going into the season. I don't think it's changed, even though I would argue that Toronto's had a better start to the season, regardless of the records looking almost identical. Toronto's won with more conviction. They've had some really impressive showings. But at the same time, and if we can relate this to tonight's game, I think that when they have lost, it's been pretty obvious what the problems have been. So, if Winnipeg cannot allow the Toronto Maple Leafs to pick up pucks and turn pucks over and bring it back the other way, whether it's through the neutral zone with speed on like the Kadri goal last game, or within their own zone, Matthews stripping Line A for that happening goal, that was a huge component of what happened there. And then on the Ennis goal, obviously Levo throwing it from the point after a turnover. So these teams are, it's so early that these teams are still trying to figure things out. If you place them beside each other, it's almost a mirror image in terms of, two deadly power plays, two quality goaltenders, two high powered offenses, two, I don't want to say average defense groups, but not the best defense groups in the entire league. And the forward groups are obviously garnering all the attention and rightfully so. So I see if I'm looking across the league, these two teams match up very well on paper in terms of, having a good mix of young and old, having, those really strong high-end forwards and some decent depth. So it's really hard to pinpoint something or to give them both grades at this point in the season. But I think that they're more or less what we thought that they would be.
John, last time we had you on, it was about a month ago, we asked you about William Nylander and, how he was unsigned and, when you thought he was going to sign. And here we are, October 27th. We're 4 days away from November. We're just over a month away from December 1st. If he doesn't sign by December 1st, he's not going to play this year. So we hear from the TSN insiders that, talks are progressing and William Nylander might sign in the next week, but he's not signed yet. You hear that maybe the Arizona Coyotes are interested in William Nylander. But the question I have for you, regardless of when Nylander signs, where does he fit in on this roster? Because, we talked about the lines right now, Matthews, Marleau, and Kapanen, that line is clicking. That second line of Tavares, Hyman, and Mitch Marner, that line is clicking. When Nylander comes back, does he start off on the third line?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and my hunch is, based on how Mike Babcock seems to view situations like this and doesn't like throwing guys into the deep end, I would assume that he would be placed on Kadri's right wing and that Connor Brown would slide down to the fourth line, and maybe, Josh Levo ends up watching from the press box. That would be my guess. I know that Lindholm, Kadri, and Brown have looked pretty good. So you don't necessarily want to break that up just for the sake of giving Nylander some time. But, what are your other options, right? I don't know if you would touch the top two lines based on what they've produced so far. There's a possibility that, depending on how Patrick Marleau does before Nylander signs, I guess there's a possibility that you throw Nylander back with Matthews and Kapanen, because Marleau, he's been okay this season, but no even starting goals yet, and only a few assists here and there. He's been okay. So you wonder if you want to light a fire under him, does he get demoted down the lineup and Nylander slides in on his side, or in his spot on Matthews' left side? So there's a few possibilities, but I'd say the Tavares line is probably off limits. The Matthews line is likely off limits, and the Kadri line would be most the I think that's probably where he'll slide in when he eventually signs.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is John Mattis. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets and the Leafs will do battle later on tonight in a rematch from Wednesday night's contest. John, shifting away from this game right now, we spent last segment talking about the St. Louis Blues and the Los Angeles Kings, two teams that are certainly struggling early on this season. Of John Stevens and Mike Yeo, which one do you think is in more trouble?
Well, based on Mike Yeo's comments the other day, you would think it would be him. That's a good question. I would say John Stevens. I'm getting my sports mixed up here.
Stevens isn't in any trouble with the Celtics.
Exactly. I would say John Stevens for the very fact that he's been on the coaching staff for a while now. He was, working with Daryl Sutter for a number of years. So he's, he was given the reins, and then you get a shorter leash, I think, under those circumstances versus just coming into a new environment. And also, I think the St. Louis Blues are going to turn this around. I have all the confidence in the world in what Doug Armstrong did this summer and how they look on paper. So I think that they're going to be fine. I mean, maybe it'll take longer than everyone expected coming into the season, but I think that they'll still make the playoffs and they'll be okay. The Kings, on the other hand, I don't think they'll be okay, and I don't know if it should be all blamed on Stevens because of he doesn't have a ton to work with in terms of this team trying to play faster, trying to generate more offense, and that's sort of been the line there in LA, is that we're going to try and play faster, we're going to try and transition from the big bulky team to the skilled fast team. Well, that's hard to do as a coach if you don't have the actual players that can play that type of game. So I don't know if I place all the blame on Stevens, but at the same time, at the end of the day, the coaches are usually the first ones to go versus maybe the GM. So I would definitely put Stevens ahead of Yeo. I think that the leash is a lot shorter there.
No, John, I saw your tweet a couple of days ago about Max Domi, and you tweeted out that, this is the Max Domi from the London Knights. This isn't the Max Domi that we've seen the last couple of years struggling with the Arizona Coyotes. And, people forget that he put up crazy numbers with the London Knights, and especially in the playoffs the year that they went to the Memorial Cup. And he's always going to be linked to Winnipeg because his dad was Ty Domi, who played for the Jets, and he's from Winnipeg. And, if you remember back to the 2013 draft, a lot of Jets fans were hoping that the Jets were going to get him at 13th overall. He goes 12th overall to the Arizona Coyotes. How surprised are you that Max Domi is flourishing playing center?
Yeah, well, I had given up on Max Domi, in my head, in terms of, okay, what, is this guy going to be an impact NHLer, or is he just going to kind of hang on as a winger, in the top nine and obviously string along a nice career, but just be a regular NHLer? And at least based on the early returns in Montreal, I was wrong, and he's doing things that I didn't expect. And like you alluded to with my tweet, is I was in Buffalo the other day watching the Habs Sabres game, and just there's a certain, like, it sounds kind of cliche, but there's a certain aura or confidence about him right now, where it's like he can just go out there and play his game. There's no, maybe it's the center thing. Maybe it's just playing for a faster team. There's a million different possibilities there that I haven't explored. But Max Domi in the London Knights organization when he was in junior was at least when I would watch the team, I was covering them then, I thought that he was going to go higher in the draft than Bo Horvat. He didn't. So that's when I started thinking, okay, am I seeing something different here? And then, obviously Bo Horvat's turned into a better NHLer. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I was wrong about that. But then now I'm looking back at Max Domi, and it seems like he's doing the things that he used to do in junior, but at the NHL level, now that he's with Montreal. And it's almost like the shackles have come off of him. I don't know if Arizona was particularly, poor to him or didn't give him his opportunity or made him play too defensively. I don't think that's the case, but I just think that, in a new environment, he's found a way to flourish, and sometimes it's just, a couple goals go in early in the season, and all of a sudden he looks around, during warm-up and goes, hey, I can do this again tonight. And it's just sort of, one of those things that's hard to really put a finger on, but he certainly looks like the Max Domi of old, which if you're a Habs fan, you got to be licking your chops, because he was quite dominant against his peers in junior and just had this sort of edge to him where, you know, he could go toe-to-toe with some bigger guys, and, you know, he wouldn't fight as much, but he had that engaged personality, or that engaged style of play mixed in with this incredible skill. And as we all saw the other night, that shot that he scored on the Buffalo Sabres. So I've been pleasantly surprised by him this year, because I honestly counted him out.
John, last question for you. John Mattis, national hockey writer for thescore.com, joins us here on the program. At season's end, are we still going to be talking about Mikko Rantanen, Nathan MacKinnon, and Gabriel Landeskog as one of the best lines in hockey? I mean, the way they're tearing up the league right now is truly incredible.
I think so. I think that they've got some kind of magic that you can relate to the line in Boston with Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand. I don't know. It's not on that level, obviously, but the more interesting question for me is that, is this sustainable from a team perspective? Like, can you load up one line? In Boston, I think that they can, and they've obviously proven that it works, given, you know, all the wins that they've had and limited playoff success, but some playoff success lately. With Colorado, that lineup is not deep whatsoever. So I'm quite curious to see how it affects the team and its win-loss record, and if all of a sudden the goals dry up, as they do over the season for any line and any player, if that sends Colorado into a tailspin, because the rest of their lineup just isn't up to snuff with you know, a regular NHL team. So I do think that they have something there. I think that they really complement each other. Obviously, Nathan MacKinnon is the key piece, and I think Rantanen's shown that he is in, you know, sort of a Leon Draisaitl type of class, you know, kind of that second-tier star that can play with the superstar. I think he's definitely proven that so far this season. And then Landeskog, honestly, I think he's definitely the third wheel there, but has proven over his career that he can, you know, he's a top-six guy, and that he can contribute in some way. So I see that being consistent. I see that working, but it's just a matter of if it actually works for Colorado in terms of, you know, winning hockey games.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks again, guys.
Our pleasure. Take care, John. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's really frustrating to me on conversations on the ice amongst opponent on a face-off, and it's like a big hug fest sometimes. I don't know if they have so many meetings with this NHLPA and all that stuff that goes on, but there's no hate, and I miss that. And it frustrates the shit out of me, quite honestly.
I got to tell you, Ezzy, I love John Tortorella. Talking earlier this week with media in Columbus about the love fest that's on the ice, the lack of hate.
If he's wondering where the hate is, yeah, he just hasn't been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, we hate each other, but we're not on the ice. I mean, you know, nobody wants to see us in a fist fight here in the studio.
Drew, I don't think we hate each other. No, I think it's more of a strong dislike.
I think it's a hate, but it's a hate combined with some love.
Yeah.
Only, like, you know, that good friends can have, where you really, like, you want to punch the guy in the face so often, but you know you can't because he's your buddy.
Yeah.
And I think people understand where I'm coming from with that. John Tortorella, frustrated by the lack of hate that's on the ice, you know, too chummy his players are with the opposition, too much chatter in between. You know, from an entertainment perspective, he's not wrong. What was the best game, the most emotional game so far this season? Jets and the Predators, right?
And what do those two teams have?
They have hate for one another.
Right.
And so from a fan's point of view, the game is way more entertaining when there's honest to goodness dislike between the two sides. The problem is that dislike only develops because of the playoffs.
And if you listen by the way, to the whole, you know, commentary from John Tortorella, the whole scrum there. You know, he goes on and you know, calls himself a dinosaur.
Well, it's a very old school way of thinking.
Right. And, you know, what I love is that John Tortorella is always the coach that speaks out.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. He always has been, going back to his days with the Rangers.
Well, last year, if you remember last year, his comment about part of playing in the NHL is playing guilty, when he was encouraging his team, the Blue Jackets, to go out when they were in Vegas, and more or less saying, you know, it used to be accepted that a player would play with a hangover sometimes. The player wouldn't necessarily be a tip-top shape because of the night before. That doesn't happen anymore. And Tortorella is sort of lamenting the olden days where there was hate and players really did dislike one another. And when there is hate, and when those games are more entertaining.
They are more entertaining. And I think what he's really talking about here, and the Blue Jackets are off to a, you know, 500 start.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big win for them over the St. Louis Blues, but they're not off to what I would call a great start.
No.
It's an okay start.
5-4.
Right. So it's 500.
Yeah, 500.
A little bit over 500.
Third in the Metropolitan Division.
Right. So I mean, like I said, I mean, it's not a great start, not a bad start.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, you know, Torts, and he's a fiery guy, he always has been, he's talking about the intensity on his team.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, you wonder if maybe losing a guy like a Matt Calvert, Or those types of intense. I mean, let's be honest. They have some players who aren't the most intense players. Artemi Panarin is one of them.
Well,
Artemi Panarin is one of the most skilled guys in the league.
Right.
He's not exactly what you'd call an intense guy on the ice.
I don't think it's players, is he? I think the problem is you.
Well, it's the team. I think he's talking about the culture in the NHL.
In the NHL, because I think you're right now. You're at game 11 or game 10, depending on the team you are, of an 82 game season. How many of those 82 games are really that relevant?
Well, you could make the argument they're all relevant, because if you get too far behind the eight ball before American Thanksgiving, you're out of it.
But you're not going to have the same emotion for all 82 games, because you can't.
Well, do they have that same emotion in baseball?
No.
Or any other sport?
Well, I mean, I would say in football they do, because there's only 16 games.
Okay.
But I mean, where?
But that's apples and oranges, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The season, the schedule, and the season, and the way it's laid out is also what contributes to the lack of hate. You know, when you have 82 games, it's easy to say, I don't get that geared up for game number 24, because game number 25, 26, and 27 are right around the corner.
Well, look at the Nashville Predators.
Okay.
I mean, they're geared up every game. They're 8-2.
They're playing.
I don't see a Predators team. I mean, I'm just saying, I see that's an intense team to me.
Well,
they have been for, I would say, going back 3 or 4 years now since Peter Laviolette took over. I mean, this is a team that I think, you know, they are pretty consistent from game to game. I'm just saying.
I think that's part of the problem the Jets are currently having, is they played such meaningful games last year for the first time ever that it's hard to get excited to play the Carolina Hurricanes on a Sunday afternoon.
But if you're not getting up for games early in the season, you're in the wrong business.
Well, I mean, we've seen a lot of teams sort of coast until the games begin to really mean more. We've seen it with Pittsburgh for years. We saw it with the Blackhawks during their heyday. It's hard to find the emotion and to get the emotion to play at, you know, peak level when there's so many games. And I think that's part of what John Tortorella is complaining about, is, you know, these guys play too many games. There's not any hatred for one another because there's so much movement among players, often among teams, and there's so much camaraderie, and everybody trains together in the off season. I mean, everybody goes to the BioSteel camp in the off season, that, you know, one guy's not going to hate another guy because they all have a cottage next to each other, and they don't and they train together in the off season.
Tortorella is a coach that demands a lot out of his players, and he likes players to play with emotion. And you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you have a fired up team who's playing emotional, and who's sometimes those games come down to effort. I mean, especially in close games,
sure,
where, you know, one goal is the deciding factor on special teams. And, you know, you look at some of the games around the league, including, obviously, we watch most of the games involving the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Some games are more emotional and more intense than others. And you're not going to have the Jets-Nashville games three games in a row. I mean, you just aren't, especially in the regular season. I mean, I agree with you. Early on in the season, I think it's tougher for these guys to get up, especially for a team that knows that they can kind of coast on their skill. And they can be down a goal, and they can just turn it up in the third period and win a game.
Is there any way to get that hatred back into the game that John Tortorella is talking about?
By the way, he's not talking about, you know, ultra violence here. He's talking about hatred as in, we want to beat the other team so bad.
That's right.
And you know, refuse to lose. And what he's saying, I think, you know, he takes a bit of a shot at the NHLPA there. I think sometimes you do see, you know, guys laughing a little bit too much. And I think what he probably loathes is that, you know, it looks like sometimes when they're losing, these guys don't really care.
Yeah, that's exactly
what he's talking about, right?
That's right. That there isn't the, you know, they're not despondent over losing a game.
He wants players to feel sick in the stomach when they lose.
You're absolutely right. He wants them to, not the hatred for the opposition, but the hatred of losing is visceral.
Right.
And they don't have that. And I think largely they don't have that because, one, it's an 82-game season. And two, I mean, there just is such a camaraderie among these players nowadays that they probably never used to have.
Right, and I think it has to be within reason, right? I mean, you're going to have players that are friends with each other, especially players that have played with each other, or players that are, you know, fellow countrymen.
Yeah.
Right, so...
Well, I don't think he's advocating for taking a skate off and chasing after a guy and trying to stab him with a blade.
He's just saying sometimes, you know, it looks like players are having too much fun on the ice.
Yeah.
And probably too much when they're losing.
It's got the emotion of a rec league game or a game of shinny when you're with your buddies on the outdoor rink. I don't think he's wrong. I don't know how you get it back. I think it's probably gone, with the exception of very few games in the course of a season. But, you know...
I don't think it's completely gone, but I think it's... Sometimes,
it's a dying
sometimes
breed.
It's lacking.
Of an 82-game season, how many do you really feel that are played with emotion? How many games do you think have a real emotional vibe to them in the course of an 82 game?
Well, it's so hard to qualify
game?
That.
I know, but
right?
Ballpark it. I mean, you know, you watch a lot of hockey. You watch a ton of hockey.
Some teams are more intense than other teams. If you're talking about the Jets, I think, you know, I'd say the majority of games are played with emotion, maybe not as much early on the season. I think this season's been a little bit different because the expectations for the Jets have been raised based on their 52-win season last year going to the Western Conference Final. So it's hard to put a percentage on it, right, Drew? Like, what is it? 50%? 70%? I have no idea. I can tell you that some games...
are pretty sleepy.
Yes. Some games have a lot more emotion. We talked about it. The Jets-Predators game had a lot more emotion.
Right.
The Jets-Blues game. The Jets and Blues are good rivals.
Yeah.
I thought that game had a lot of hate.
Well, but when the Jets are going to play, I don't know, let's take the New York Islanders. You know, a fairly nondescript team, not going anywhere this year.
I don't watch the Islanders enough, though, so.
Right, no, but when the Jets and the Islanders play each other, and they're going to play twice a year, and let's say they play on a Monday night in the middle of December, right, and I'm just, you know, throwing it out there, it's hard to get any emotion up for that game. Because you never see this team. You don't have any rivalry with this team. You don't have any real... It's a game that, you know, it's just one of 82. There's nothing special about the game.
But then, Drew, you also have to get into some players just play with more emotion. Like a guy like Matty Perreault, a guy like Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp, Ben Chiarot. They play with more emotion in general, right, than a guy like...
I don't know. I know what you're saying. You don't have to name any
specific
names.
You know, I don't want
to
say guys that don't play with emotion, but, I mean, there are high-energy guys and low-energy guys,
mm-hmm.
right?
I
think we know there's a few younger players on the team that maybe play with less emotion.
Well,
without naming names.
Yeah, that's just not their, and maybe they're going to develop that emotion as they get more comfortable in the NHL. But I think the biggest complaint, and this is what Tortorella is saying, is that, you know, too many of the games are somewhat meaningless and thus somewhat emotionless, which isn't a word, but somewhat lacking emotion in the course of an 82-game season. And he's lamenting that fact that guys are just going through the motions on some of those games.
I agree with you. I don't think that he is wrong in his comments. I mean, sometimes I don't agree with what he says.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes he's treated the media poorly.
Certainly.
But I think that what he's talking about, sometimes you see that on the ice.
Yeah.
Looks like these guys don't, you know, aren't fully in the game. I'm not saying that they don't care if they win or lose, but they just don't look like they're emotionally invested in the game. Some players. I'm not going to say all players, mm-hmm. or some teams are worse than others. I'm just talking about in general.
When we come back, Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com is going to join us. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll touch base with what's going on in Vegas early on in this 2018-19 NHL campaign. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Working hard to get Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com in Vegas on the program to talk about the Golden Knights. Golden Knights struggling a little bit to start the year. 4-5-1. Sixth, or I guess tied for fifth with the Oilers in the Pacific Division. So things haven't been quite as smooth as they were last season. Fortunately, they play in a pretty weak division, so they should be able to come back and bounce back from that and get back to at least a playoff position in due time. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. No tickets available for the shows this weekend. I'll be there tonight. Your family was there last night, Ezzy. Norm MacDonald, you know Norm from Saturday Night Live, you know him from Netflix, you know him from TV, from podcasts.
He has a show.
Yes, he has a show. Norm MacDonald has a show on Netflix. That's what it's called. And he's at Rumors tonight. Two shows tomorrow night. There were two shows last night and two shows Thursday night. Completely sold out. I'm really excited about seeing Norm MacDonald tonight at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy
Saturday Club. Night, right? He obviously used to do Weekend Update Saturday Night Live, so that'll be a fun one.
It will be a fun one tonight at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. He's a good friend of the program. Jesse Granger joins us next. Jesse, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, for sure. I always like coming on with you guys.
Oh, Jesse, we appreciate your time. Obviously, wanted to bring you on to talk about the Golden Knights through their first 10 or so games this season. Certainly not the same start that they had last year when they blew everybody out of the water. 4-5-1 to start through their first 10 games. Why are the Golden Knights struggling a little bit more this year than they did, obviously, last year where they were a house on fire for really the entire season?
Yeah, I mean, the puck isn't going in the net is probably the best answer. They've scored two goals or fewer in 8 of the 10 games, and that's not ideal. And obviously last year they were scoring a ton of goals. And I think it's partially to do with just a lot of moving pieces. They added a few guys. Paul Stastny comes in. Obviously you guys know him well. He only plays a couple games, gets hurt. Now he's out. All of a sudden that guy that you thought was going to be your second line center isn't playing, and he's going to be out for a couple months. The other addition, Max Pacioretty, just got hurt last night, and we're going to try to get an update here in a few minutes at practice to see how long he'll be out. Alex Tuck, the other second line guy, so it's all revolving around that second line. Alex Tuck missed the first 7 games of the season. They finally got him back. He looks a lot. He helps them look a lot better on offense. But yeah, it's been a lot of moving pieces. And on defense, obviously the suspension of Nate Schmidt has hurt them. And they just haven't had that groove that last year they seemed to have every single night.
You know, Jesse, you mentioned the Golden Knights are having trouble scoring goals. And, you know, William Karlsson, he scored last night. He's got 3 goals. And we thought there might be a little bit of a regression, considering that last year was a career year for him, scoring 40-plus goals. But, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, he's off to a good start. And Riley Smith on that line. That line is still putting up decent numbers. But you mentioned Max Pacioretty, and he suffered an injury, and we're not sure, you know, the extent of that injury. But do you know why he's struggling so much offensively? And how hard is it to see Thomas Tatar flourishing for the Montreal Canadiens, considering that the Golden Knights gave up those draft picks to acquire Tatar?
Yeah, for the first part, Pacioretty, part of the reason is Alex Tuck wasn't playing, obviously, for the first 7 games of the season. And what that did was it forced Pacioretty to fill that kind of F1 role, because he's on the line with Eric Halla and Tomáš Hika, who are 2 smaller, faster guys. But what they did was they dumped the puck into the zone. Pacioretty would have to be that F1. He'd have to go into that corner, fight for the puck, battle in the corner, and then he'd have to try to get the puck to one of those guys. And that's not what you want Pacioretty doing. That's, you didn't give up all those assets to get Pacioretty to do that. Now that Tuck's back, Tuck can be that guy to go in the corner, fight for the puck, hopefully give the puck to Pacioretty in good spots and let him shoot it. I mean, that's what you got him for. That's what you paid him all that money for. That's what you gave all those assets up for, is to get Pacioretty the puck in good spots and let him shoot. You hope that starts happening now more that Alex Tuck's out there. As for Tatar, yeah, I mean, if you're a Golden Knights fan, you don't want him to be awesome, but the problem is, he was never going to be that in Vegas, I don't think. From the moment they traded for him at the deadline from Detroit, I never saw it. I never saw it in practice. I never saw it in a game. I never saw it ever from Tomas Tatar. So for whatever reason, he just wasn't working here, and I don't think you can, like, really fault yourself for – I actually applaud McPhee for moving on from a move that he made that clearly wasn't going to work here.
Jesse Granger is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, it's rare when a suspended player signs a lengthy contract extension, but that's what happened earlier this week with Nate Schmidt, who, of course, is suspended for the performance-enhancing drug violation. He signs a six-year, $35.7 million contract extension, which kicks in next year, $5.95 million AAV. How surprised were you about the timing of this contract extension for Nate Schmidt?
Yeah, an extremely unique situation. Nate Schmidt's not even in North America right now. He's all the way over in Vienna, Austria, where he's been skating with the Capitals over there, just trying to be around a professional hockey team and get his skates in. That's how they decided to do it. And he signs this huge deal to become one of the lengthiest, highest paid players on the Golden Knights. And I like the deal because I think last year Nate Schmidt proved he's the best defenseman on this team in multiple ways, because Nate Schmidt is the only guy on this team that's a shutdown defenseman. You do have other good defenders in Colin Miller and Shea Theodore, but they're more offensive minded. They're good on the power play. They can carry the puck. They're obviously weapons. They can score goals that you need. But Nate Schmidt is a number one defenseman that you can put out against the team's top unit every night and feel good about it. And they're missing him really bad early in the season. But I think it's a fair deal for both sides. The circumstances around it are unique. I even asked George McPhee two nights ago when they announced the deal if the suspension had any bearing on how much money they paid him or how long it was or anything. And he said, absolutely not. We basically made the deal and pretended like the suspension didn't happen because they believe that Nate Schmidt, that he did not intentionally take PEDs and there was something wrong with something he ate. That's what they believe now. I don't know if that's true. We'll never know the real truth, but that's what they believe. So they paid him under that assumption.
You know, Jesse, sticking with big contracts, Shea Theodore, he was a bit of a late signing. He also signed that big seven-year contract, and he scored his first goal of the season yesterday afternoon against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, how would you assess his first 10 games? You mentioned Nate Schmidt. He was their number one defenseman last year. With Schmidt out of the lineup, Shea Theodore has stepped in, and he's the de facto number one defenseman for the Knights right now.
Yeah, Shea Theodore, he's had a little bit of a slow start, which is kind of what you expect when somebody misses all of training camp. Theodore is one of those guys that when George McPhee made that long-term deal, I think he knew full and well that early in the deal he was going to be overpaying for Theodore because last year was his rookie season. He obviously played in the playoffs for the Ducks the year before that and looked great, but he's still relatively new in the NHL, and especially for a defenseman, it takes you a while to clean up that play in your own end. And I think for the first couple of years of this Theodore deal, the Golden Knights are probably overpaying him. They're paying him more than he's worth. The hope is that he'll keep progressing, and then by the second half of this deal, the back half, you're going to be drastically underpaying for Shea Theodore because you hope his defensive game catches up with his offensive game. Because his offensive game is amazing. I mean, the plays this kid makes, taking the puck from end to end, just dancing through the entire defense, and then either scoring or feeding it to someone else are amazing. And that's not going anywhere. You just need his defensive game. 2 games ago, he had a really – he struggled defensively, gave up a couple breakaways. He has those lapses. You hope that that part of his game catches up with the offensive part, and you think it eventually will. And when it does, you've got a deal.
Jesse Granger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. George McPhee's been busy, Jesse. Alex Tuch gets a 7-year contract extension. He's going to get paid an average annual value of $4.75 million per season. For a guy who's only had one full year in the NHL where he put up 37 points, how much risk do you think is involved in giving him a 7-year contract?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's very similar to the Shea Theodore thing that I just talked about. And those two actually live together. They've been roommates since they came to the Golden Knights, Theodore and Tuch. And their contracts are very similar. It's a situation of we're going to overpay him now to hope that we're drastically underpaying him later. And Alex Tuch, he brings so much to this team. And obviously he's only played the last 2 games. He was injured before that. But they're the worst power play in the entire NHL right now, the Golden Knights. They're 2-for-33, I think. It's been ugly. And Alex Tuch is such an important part of that power play. He has the size and the speed. I mean, he's 6'4", 220, and he's one of the fastest skaters on the ice. He uses that to gain the zone for him because he can just barrel into the zone with the puck, and he's got the hands to hold on to it as he's going through defensemen. Then once you get it in the zone, he's that net front presence. He's a big guy. He's hard to move out of the way. And he's got this hands to tip the pucks while they're coming in front. I think he's going to help that power play a ton. He's going to help Max Pacioretty on the second line. He's got a really, really high ceiling. I wrote a story for The Athletic when they signed him a few days ago. Basically, I went around and asked all the players and I asked the coaches and I asked McPhee, what is his ceiling? And the answer for most people was pretty much unlimited. He has the potential to be one of the best players in this league with his size, his speed, his hands. He just has to develop because, I mean, he's only 22. He's still learning. So you hope that when you sign that 7-year deal, your hope is that 5 years from now, everyone's saying, oh my God, that's what they're paying Alex Tuch? Wow, that's a steal.
Jesse, earlier this week, I thought you had a great article for The Athletic about Ryan Reeves, and obviously Reeves is from Winnipeg, Manitoba. His dad was a running back for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He scored that big goal for the Golden Knights last year in the Western Conference Final against the Jets, and you write that, you know, that the line, and you call them the Basher brothers, Ryan Reeves, William Carrier, Pierre-Edward Belmar, he's the other guy in that line. That line actually leads the Golden Knights in shots generated per 60 minutes. Do you think Ryan Reeves is getting enough credit for how well he's playing for the Golden Knights and, you know, that he's more than just a power forward that can drop the gloves?
Yeah, I mean, for me, he's definitely getting enough credit because every time I go on the radio or TV or I write, all I've been doing is talking about Ryan Reeves. I love the guy. Last year, he struggled when he first came over to the Golden Knights, but just from a personality, hanging out with the guy in the locker room sense, I mean, he's amazing. Like, I can't get enough of Ryan Reeves. But this year, that fourth line has been producing offensively, and like I mentioned in the story, you've got William Carrier and Ryan Reeves, who are just wrecking balls. They just get on the ice and crush everything. And then you've got Pierre-Edouard Belmar, who is more of the intellectual guy. He's the center on that line. He is the one that gets those guys in the film room, helps them figure out what plays they are leaving on the table, and they practice and then practice, and now it's been working in the games, and they've been creating a ton of chances. And they've only scored the 2 goals by Ryan Reeves, but they've had a ton of grade A chances that they need to start putting in the back of the net, and then they'll become not just the top shot producing line, but they can be one of the higher scoring lines on this team. It's been really crazy how well offensively they've played, considering they've got 2 guys in Carrier and Reeves that are not really particularly offensively skilled. I mean, they just go in there and they crush everyone. So it's been fun to watch. It puts pressure on the top lines. I talked to Jonathan Marchessault, and I asked him, like, what is the effect of those guys scoring, those type of guys that don't normally score? And he's like, well, if those guys are scoring and we're losing games, that's on us as a top line. Because when the fourth line is scoring goals, those are games we need to win. Because if those guys are scoring, we should be scoring. Those should be easy wins. So it's putting pressure on the top line that those guys are performing so well down there.
Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. The Jets won't see the Golden Knights until mid-January, but if history is any indicator, those games should be important in the battle in the Western Conference. Jesse, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Remember, the Jets and the Leafs, a 6 o'clock puck drop here tonight on TSN Radio 1290. Haas and Rick will be in for the afternoon ride at 3 o'clock, and then Kevin Owen Friends, as our good buddy Paul Edmonds likes to say, 5 o'clock pregame show leading you into the Jets and the Leafs coverage. Interesting segment from Insider Trading earlier this week had to do with Jesse Puljujarvi, the former third overall pick of the Edmonton Oilers. Who's,
fourth overall pick. Dubois was
right.
Third overall.
Dubois was after the Blue Jackets chose to pass.
I was there, no big
on Puljujarvi. I know, no big deal. In fact, known as the Ezra Grinsberg and the NHL draft now. Is that right? Is that
it's actually Mr. Scrumlurker.
Oh, yes, to that's you, right. Drew. I forgot to mention Scrumlurkers already. Hang on, let's get to the priority first. Ezzy making his first appearance on Scrumlurkers with Jay and Dan earlier this week. I mean, I woke up at about, I woke up, I checked my phone, my Twitter feed. Boom, the photo of you, that smiling face in the corner wearing your nice new shirt. That was a good way to get my day started.
It's a Ben Sherman shirt.
It's a Ben Sherman shirt. Look at you. Somebody's doing well for themselves.
And Naomi ordered that online for me.
There's no question that you didn't buy that shirt.
Very proud of that shirt.
Yeah, there's no question you didn't buy that shirt.
Oh, no, I don't buy any of my clothes.
No, she dresses
Naomi
you too.
Naomi dresses me every day.
100%. Yeah. But there's that smiling face, that little smirk that's on your face as you're getting caught.
I look like an idiot.
Hey, you didn't look like an idiot. I mean, Scrum Lurkers is a hilarious segment that Jay and Dan do. And then, I mean, our good buddy Darren Bombing has been caught in it on more than one occasion as well.
Jason Bell was in there last week.
In there. So it's only about time that you get caught on Scrum Lurkers.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we know Jay and Dan. We've met both of them.
Yeah.
I know you.
Frequent guests here on the program back in the day.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, it's funny because, you know, for those who haven't seen it, and I imagine most people haven't seen it, but
I'll send a link.
It was during the Jake Allen scrum, and obviously, you know, Jake Allen, you know, he just lost the game, and, you know, they lost in overtime, and, you know, anytime I'm in the camera's range, I get worried that I might be on Scrum Lurkers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I came in there late and I was on the side there and I was, you know, they got me.
Yeah, there's no way you're avoiding it now. It's, you know, anyways, it was pretty funny. We'll send out a link on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve.
Please don't.
Here's Darren Dreger quickly on Jesse Puljujarvi of the Edmonton Oilers.
He's in his third year in the National Hockey League, so he needs to be treated like every other player. And the harsh reality is Kailer Yamamoto has outplayed Jesse Puljujarvi to this point. There's a trust issue between the coach and the player, so it's ultimately on the player to try and improve that.
One goal in 7 games for Jesse Puljujarvi. You heard Dreger say there about the trust issue between head coach Todd McClellan and the player. What happens here, Ezzy? Is this a guy that is, you know, destined to be a long-term member of the Edmonton Oilers as he continues to struggle to find his way in the NHL game?
Yeah, he was a healthy scratch against the Washington Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after 8 games, what did he have, 1 assist or 1 goal?
1 goal. 1 goal, 0 assists.
Right. 1 goal in 8 games, no assists, as you mentioned. That's just not good enough.
A team that's struggling to find any offense behind Connor McDavid.
And, you know, he's obviously not playing on the top line, but he's played on the second line with Leon Draisaitl, and he's played on the third line with Ryan Strome, the two centers. And, you know, he just doesn't look very good out there. He looks a little bit lost at times. I think there are some similarities between Puljujarvi and Laine. Obviously, Laine came into the league as an 18-year-old and tore it up and had 36 goals. Then he had 44 last year. So obviously, you know, he's well ahead of Puljujarvi, and he's a much better player, in my opinion. But Puljujarvi has been being given offensive starts. Like, they're putting him out there in an offensive role. They're not putting him out there.
Yeah, he's not a shutdown center.
He's not a shutdown winger. He's not a penalty killer. I mean, they're expecting secondary scoring. I mean, they know that Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Ty Ratty, I mean, that's their top line right now. That's going to be the line that provides the majority of their offense. But they need Puljujarvi along with Draisaitl and Milan Lucic to be better than they have. Certainly last year, they weren't good enough. And, you know, Puljujarvi scored some goals last year. But the fact that he's a healthy scratch is concerning. And, you know, Darren Dreger mentions in TSN Insider Trading that he doesn't think, you know, that the Oilers are going to look to trade Puljujarvi. And you got to think that based on the trades the Oilers have made over the last 3 years,
which
trading
ones,
Taylor
the
Hall.
One, the ones that were bad or the ones that were worse?
Well, right. I mean, Taylor Hall is a first overall pick.
Yeah.
Jordan Eberle is a relatively high draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those trades didn't work out. I really hope that Peter Chiarelli isn't considering moving Jesse Puljujarvi, because even though he's 21 years old and he's maybe behind where you thought he was going to be in his development, I think you got to give this some time. And I obviously think the healthy scratch was a message being sent to him. And I think the Oilers do play tonight, so you expect Puljujarvi to be back in the lineup, and you know, hopefully he responds with a big game.
Yeah, the Oilers are at Nashville tonight, so that'll certainly be a very difficult challenge, and a player who's trying to find his way early in his NHL career, but it's not that early anymore. He's been around the Oilers organization for a while now. One goal, no assist. That's not what they expected of the former fourth overall pick. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to all of our guests, Jesse Granger, John Mattis, Mitch Peacock, Marty Biron, and Ted Wyman. In case you missed any of those interviews or any of the show, it's going to be available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It'll be available on tsn1290.ca. And of course, it's available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer James, doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.